One.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. My name is Alex. I am your host for today's podcast. And joined with me, as always, we have the never inscrutable, always ready to go, Mathias Olmakarasaki and Ryan Splash Pies. I decided not to ride today because why would I need to? But, gentlemen, how are we doing on this fine Wednesday recording? We all took a bit of a break for Christmas and for the holidays, and also a Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays to everyone listening to the chat. How you guys doing? Did you guys have a good break off?
Yeah, I had some of my siblings in town. A couple of them are actually still here, but yeah, it was a good time. I went and saw Mike Birbiglia's comedy show yesterday. That was really fun. I've been playing a lot of Pokemon. I got Pokemon. That was like my main gift there. So I've spent a lot of the last 72 hours playing Pokemon. But yeah, it's been a good little break for me.
Yeah, I think I fall in the same boat here. I got a lot of reading done actually. So Mac and Alex know that I've been reading the Baseball 100 by Joe Poznanski of The Athletic. Excellent baseball history book. I got it as an early Christmas present because I wasn't home with my parents. So they're like, "Hey, take this. This is a Christmas present, but we'll give it to you a week early or whatever." So excellent book. Highly recommended.
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time with family. I'm actually getting to go to the Seattle Kraken game tonight, so I'm very excited about that. It gets the Calgary Flames, so that's going to be a good amount of fun. But no, Christmas was actually a lot of a good time for the Clark household, and I'm just glad that we got to have a bit of fun. Mac, just know that I am better at Pokemon than you, and I will challenge you on that every single day of the week. Anyway, we're getting back on now
All
to
right,
baseball
we'll see about that, but okay.
topics. Considering that I play competitive Pokemon and have been paid for playing Pokemon, we'll see. Anyway, we're gonna get on to baseball, not Pokemon related topics here as the very first one, a little bit into odd oddities here, where Carlos Correa, we've been talking about his name for what feels like ever at this point, as the saga just keeps on getting weirder and weirder. As Correa, and we broke huge news that he was signing with the Giants first. And we're like, okay, yep, he's gonna be signing with the Giants. He's gonna be there for more than likely the rest of his career. Then news comes out that, there's some injury concern with Correa, something that didn't work out well on his medical review. And then the Mets go and sign Correa for an even longer deal. And now that seems to be in flux for the exact same reason. So, the reason why this is an odd oddity is right now we've had a superstar that is signed now with two different teams for buku dollars at this point here, and nobody knows where he's going to play. So, fellas, what's the play here when it comes to Correa? What's going on here, and what does this mean right now for the rest of the MLB?
So, according to Mac in our pre-show talk, the Twins didn't do a physical on Carlos Correa. So as much as I would love to clown the Mets and love to clown the Giants, can we clown the Twins? How do you not do a physical on a player? Like, what are we doing here? This is amateur hour. So I think the Twins L takers. The Giants, you're trying to get a great player. The Mets, same thing. You're trying to get a great player, and you're signing him for that 10-year, 12-year, 13-year deal, and you have to do your due diligence. So I'm not gonna roast the Giants, not gonna roast the Mets. They're just doing their due diligence. I might roast Steve Cohen because he announced the deal before it was done. So good job, Stevie. But Twins, big L for you. Giants and Mets, you might get a great player, you might not. And I guess the Giants ship is 100% sailed. The Mets one is weird because Cohen did announce the signing, right? So there's some tampering, some goofiness with MLB rules that might restrict him from going anywhere. But look, the Mets or whomever gets Correa, I would imagine the medical is cleared up. even if he has to sign elsewhere and get a, I sent a picture in the group chat of Carlos Correa in an A's uniform, but let's say he goes to generic baseball team number three and plays a year, and we have this square dance next year.
Yeah, well, it's just, it happened so fast, also everything, because he was signing with the Giants, and then, you know, we assume everything is on point, like the Giants put up their whole ticketing deal and everything, promotion for the Correa contract, and all of a sudden, the morning of the press conference, we hear, all right, the press conference has been postponed, and like, I'm not thinking much of it. I'm like, all right, whatever, it's postponed, they're probably just gonna figure things out, and then they're still going to introduce him. And all of a sudden, it's Correa has a fiscal problem. All right, so whatever, these rarely fall through. He'll probably just still sign with them. And then all of a sudden, at 3:30 a.m. that night, I guess into the early morning hours of the next day, it's Carlos Correa is signing with the Mets to 12-year, $315 million contract. And you know, we're everyone, like, you know, all Mets fans, we're like jumping for joy and all that. In the back of my mind, though, I was wondering, like, hey, I wonder what the physical ailment is. You know, apparently it's an injury that happened when he was 19. He fractured his fibula in single A ball in 2014. It's like, all right, you know, that's an 8-year-old injury. But then you hear that the Mets are concerned with the physical, and you're like, how could this be? And we find out he has a plate in his leg. And to me, this is cause for concern. You know, Correa and Scott Boras have said, you know, we do not want to renegotiate the numbers in this. We don't want to change the 12 years or $315 million. So from here, the Mets, I say, if I'm the Mets, it's clear the Mets want this deal and Correa wants this deal. Like, Correa wants to be a Met, clearly. You know, we saw this with the Giants. That flipped very quickly. Like I said, it feels like they did not have conversations. The Mets and Correa are still having conversations here. So I think both sides want this deal to happen, but I think there has to be some fine print here. You know, this plate in your leg, God forbid you break it again. You know, that's going to alter your career forever. So I understand that if he comes to the Mets, he'd be playing third base. So not as much concern about his re-injuring that knee. It's like a little bit less of a risk, but there's still a ton of risk here. And I will say this, that if the Mets bail on this, that's two teams bailing on signing you to a long-term contract. I don't think any other team will give him a contract of this length. So it's take it or leave it. If the Mets bail, this is going to be a disaster for Correa.
I think no matter what right now, this is a disaster for Correa, as this is starting to become now a huge PR thing that we don't really know what's going to happen with it, because now he has this sort of not actual, but sort of asterisk around him, where now we have this injury bit. And on top of it, now Scott Boras and him have completely doubled down by saying, oh, hey, we have these two teams that have quote unquote agreed to sign now this my player. But now, if they're backing out, we're not renegotiating these terms. These are the terms we're going to have. And there's a reason why they backed out. It's not because Correa is a bad player, because that's not true. And it's not because, you know, he's a bad PR guy, which, you know, is mixed after 2017. But the problem is that because it's an injury concern, there's a lot more problems that are going along with it. There's a lot more of a bigger question mark, because you don't know whether or not you're going to get that playing ability out of him. So I have a bit of a hot take here, because I don't know what's going to happen here, but I think that this move here is a huge mistake by Scott Boras, because I think what's going to happen now, I don't think Correa is going to be on our roster on opening day. Now, I think that might be a little bit odd to say here, but from the fact of right now, we don't know if he's a Met, if he's a Giant, if he's anyone right now. We just know he's not the Twins, because they won't even do a physical at that point. But it's such a weird thing to say that he's not going to be on an opening day roster, but if teams aren't going to sign him, I don't see any team that would be dumb enough to sign him for this amount of time, this amount of money, and there'd be a very good chance he doesn't play any of this year. Potentially, maybe even next year, if this plate issue is really as bad as it's turning out to be, potentially. So, at that point, I think it's possible that no team offers Correa that kind of money, and then they have to bite a huge bullet of potentially maybe mid-season, or it feels kind of almost like a worker's strike right now, where at this point right now, I'm not going to sign for anything under what I want, and he's also just not going to be getting paid because he's not going to have a contract anywhere. So what I think could happen is maybe closer to mid-season, we'll see a team sign a one-year deal for Correa to prove that he can play and then prove that the injury is not real. And then it becomes another gamble year. And then we do the entire song and dance again in 2023's offseason. But yeah, I don't know. Right. I feel like this is just a weird place to be at.
Yeah, I think you can also run into the issue of it's not that Correa is not healthy. There's just the red flag on the physical, but he was able to play all of 2022 with Minnesota. And you can look at this in two ways, that it's, on one hand, it's not that injury. It's not a, like Acuna tore his ACL, for example. So it's not a, he's going to be out for a certain amount of time. It's more of a ticking time bomb thing. It's like the Drew Brees before he became a New Orleans Saint, he was a free agent and could have gone to Miami with Nick Saban, or could have gone to New Orleans, and Miami said, nope, we don't trust the shoulder, right? We don't trust it. And they made a good decision there. You know, they didn't trust the medicals. So don't draft the guy, don't trade for the guy, don't sign the guy if you don't trust the medical, but it backfired. And then there's been other circumstances that you see the red flag, like the Giants, like the Mets, but hey, you go through the signing because you trust the player, you trust that it's not a big deal. And then he's, you know, you're paying him deferred money for the rest of his life. So I think the Mets and Giants are in a weird situation. But then again, for Correa, if you can figure out, if you can solve this issue, maybe you get a more lucrative one-year deal than you would have gotten otherwise, similar to how we got $35+ million from the Twins. Because he wasn't getting 35 a year from San Francisco or New York. Perhaps you get a $30 million deal to prove it, right? Or a $32 million deal to prove it. And it's a one-year deal. So I would be on the lookout for that. I don't know who he would necessarily sign with, but he could certainly do another mercenary deal.
Yeah, and if the Mets bail on this, I wouldn't be too surprised if he just takes a one-year contract. I mean, I know he probably doesn't want to go through this whole mess again in 2023, but like Splash said, it is a bit of a ticking time bomb. I mean, as someone mentioned, that like an argument from Correa's camp is that he has only missed an average of 14 games the last three seasons. Great. But, you know, say, like I said earlier, say something does happen to that plate in his leg. Well, that probably costs you close to a full season. Who knows how long that takes to rehab. Leg injuries, especially like tears or, you know, that kneecap area, like that, those call for very, very long recovery times. So you could think about it. This, you could sign him to a long-term contract, but potentially lose him for a season or so. Or you could take the gamble and try to just give him a short-term contract, see if he wants it. Clearly, though, he wants a long-term contract. And I mean, look, there are ways to go about this. It's just it's tough from an agent standpoint too. Scott Boras wants his clients to get the most money possible. And if there's a vesting option, if there's insurance and stuff, it will cost his client money. And I understand. Look, I mean, I would want my clients to get paid too. So we've seen this in the past. I mean, JD Martinez, when the Red Sox signed him, there was a bit of a pause there because of his foot injury that he missed time with. And I mean, like, it took a bit, but he ended up playing well for Boston, won a World Series. In 2007, it took 2 months for JD Drew to also with the Red Sox. JD Drew took 2 months to reveal his medicals to the team. And then, I mean, look, the Mets, this has happened. 2004, before the season, they were going to sign Vladimir Guerrero, and then they backed out because of a potential back problem. Of course, what happened? He went and won MVP the next year. So it's happened in the past. I trust both sides to make the right decision, but this is a mess for Correa. It's for Scott Boras. And honestly, it's a bit of a mess for Steve Cohen, because it sounds like he, much like George Steinbrenner used to, kind of went past the front office and didn't really ask for it. So, yeah, this is a weird situation.
Yeah, this is probably one of the weirdest situations we've seen, actually, when it comes to one certain player that I think it, that we've seen just kind of in recent memory. Just because at this point right now, it is a player that right now we've all kind of agreed is worth that huge contract. This is a player. I wouldn't have. Sorry, I looked completely lost train of thought there for a second. I think we all agree that Correa is that kind of 10 plus year, $300+ million player. And no one's ever doubted that. One thing we have doubted, though, is whether or not it's going to be worth it if he's not going to be there for a full year. One of the players that I want to bring up here, and I understand, you know, this isn't the greatest comparison in the world, is former Mariner, now Arizona Diamondback, Kyle Lewis, who has had multiple leg injuries throughout his career. And we have seen times where, you know, he's able to get through one or so, but as they start to pile up, then the player just completely changes. Like, again, go back into 2020 with Lewis, where he had just before his the knee went down again. Remember, back in the minor leagues, he completely broke his leg sliding into home plates. And that in the majors, and still played extremely well, but was still dealing with that kind of, you know, hurt leg. And then it plays a very effective, very strong baseball in the outfield, where they were saying that he had flashes of Griffey. But he also hurt his knee again and was never the same. Leg injuries are such a weird beast, because they are ones where they can either heal back and be stronger than ever, or can completely tear you apart. And there's very little in between. There's very, very little. And it's really going to come up to whether or not Correa's rehab is going to be able to make him back to the player that he needs to be. And will he make it? Honestly, I hope so. Just because I want to see good players play good baseball. The more good players that are in the game, the more exciting baseball is to watch. But at the same time, I understand why all these teams are hesitant. And I think with Scott Boras, who is trying really hard to get the most amount of money for his players, I think this move honestly is probably one of those. This move is probably just one of those ones that's really going to end up hurting his client in the long run. Because I don't see any team, if two teams right now backed out, two teams that are contending backed out of this kind of move, I don't see a whole lot of teams that are going to be contending, which is where right now Correa is mostly looking for, are going to want to sign him. So, also, is there any other notes we have here on Correa that we can move on to our next topic of conversation? And that is a trade. I mentioned the Diamondbacks a little bit ago. Well, they pulled off a very interesting move with the Toronto Blue Jays sending out Dalton Varsho over to the Blue Jays in exchange for Gabriel Moreno and Lourdes Gurriel Jr. There's other parts to the deal, I know, but right now the two biggest parts of this right now we've seen are Varsho and Gabriel Moreno, especially on the Blue Jays side. Tell me, this is not one of those deals where one just outright wins, but did anyone else get kind of a very weird vibe when this trade happened? Like, a why the hell did something like this happen type idea?
Yeah, well, this is a tough one, because I thought the D-backs took a good amount of steps forward this past year, and Dalton Varsho was part of it. He's a guy who, you know, he's one of those anomalies where he can catch and play the outfield and do both at decent job, I would say. 27 homers at the plate, by the way, 16 steals. I know you're probably looking at that .235 batting average and say, all right, what does that do for me? I mean, still 745 OPS, 109 OPS plus. A very good defender in the outfield, by the way. 19 defensive runs saved. That's 14 in right, 5 in center. Very fast runner. That's a guy I would bat at basically anywhere in my lineup. All right, maybe don't bat him leadoff because of that relatively low on base, but he covers a lot of ground in the outfield. Let me just put it that way. And he's 99th percentile in outs above average, 97th percentile in outfielder jump. So he's a gold glove caliber outfielder. It's just the pieces the Jays gave up, giving up Gabriel Moreno, who is a major league ready catcher, basically. He hasn't hit for much power, which is a bit of a concern, but like he's been rising up through the minors very quickly and he's young. So he can be the next catcher in Arizona. He was blocked behind Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen in Toronto. So, all right, that wasn't meant to be. But then give me up Lourdes Gurriel Jr. is what just confuses me here, because I get you're getting an outfielder, but that doesn't mean you have to trade another one. You know, the Jays have already traded Teoscar Hernandez this offseason. I'm just not quite sure why, in addition to Moreno, they have to trade Gurriel. And I get that Varsho was basically a 5-win player this year by Baseball Reference, but while I like Varsho a lot, and it gives the Jays one of the best defensive outfields in baseball with Springer in right, Kevin Kiermaier in center, and Varsho in left, I'm not quite sure what they're trying to accomplish here by trading Gurriel. So who wins this deal? I lean to saying the D-backs, but I feel like the Jays are still getting a good player here.
Yeah, you certainly have walked yourself into a bit of a hole here if you're Toronto, because you have three stellar catching options. Alejandro Kirk was an all-star last season. Danny Jansen is like the king of the small sample size, that on like a 100 plate appearance basis, he's as good as Mike Trout, but he doesn't play that often. And then you have your number one prospect, a top 10 prospect in all of baseball entering last season, and Moreno, and there's nowhere to play him. So ironically, you go get another catcher, but this time the catcher can play in the outfield. So I do like the move. I think both teams got better. You bring in, for Toronto, you bring in perhaps one of the best defensive outfielders in the game. I said he should have won a gold glove. He didn't, but regardless, he's going to play left. You have Kiermaier, who is historically great defensively. Then Springer is a natural center fielder who's going to move to right for most of the season. So, like, I think you upgrade the defense and you add another left-handed bat into the lineup. You add a guy with a ton of speed, some pop, 27 home runs. So I think the Blue Jays added an important piece, and they said, hey, we have a surplus of catchers, so we're going to make a trade and we're going to bring in someone that makes our outfield better. And I think on the flip side, Arizona goes and gets their star catcher. You know, you can say, oh, well, Varsho is a good catcher. Varsho is a perfectly fine MLB catcher, but now you get a potential star at the position. And now you have all the outfield reps, if you will, playing time for guys like Alec Thomas, guys like Corbin Carroll, and other young guys in the Arizona system, that if Varsho's there, he's taking up probably 150 games in center and right, but now you can play Corbin Carroll. Now you can play Alec Thomas. So I think both teams improved. I know it's tough to part ways with Moreno, but I don't think Moreno was, he was a bit of a luxury piece, a bit like, I don't know, if the Mets signed Wilson Contreras and then you're looking at Francisco Alvarez, like, what's the point? So I think the Blue Jays acknowledged they have a surplus of catching talent. The Diamondbacks said they had a surplus of outfielding talent, and they just swapped pieces.
This is a really interesting deal, I think, right now. I definitely have some kind of odd vibes about it, just because I see that the Blue Jays have been very vocal from the trade market this offseason. Again, we saw the big one a little bit ago with them trading away Teoscar Hernandez to my Mariners. But now this is another one where it's not one of their offensive pieces that's moving, as well as one of their it's like one of their main positions of strength. Because again, they do have really three good catchers in Alejandro Kirk. They've got Danny Jensen and now Gabriel Moreno. So you knew that they were going to trade more likely at least one of them. during this off season. It was just about which one and to where. And we knew that as well with the Diamondbacks. They were really trying to get another good bat for their team, as especially for, you know, this, like, for this Diamondbacks team that's really starting to make some interesting moves here. They're definitely starting to get a little bit, they're getting stronger moment by moment with not a whole lot of huge plays. Like, they haven't gotten anyone that's been truly, like, earth-shattering. But they have an interesting outfield now with the addition of Varsho. All three of them are center fielders, basically. Where you've got, again, you've got Varsho, you've got Springer, and you got Kiermaier. So, okay, all three of them are center fielders. And if you want to have one position be all three of them, I would want it to be center fielders, as most of the time they're the player that can cover the most ground. But overall, something still almost shows panic from this kind of move. Unless it was the fact that maybe the Diamondbacks saw more value in Moreno, or if they wanted to try and get to a win now, I would almost think they would go try to go for Kirk or for Jansen. But maybe it could have just been that the Blue Jays didn't want to give up one of those guys, but they're willing to give up one of the players that is of their future. I don't know. There's a lot of question marks when it comes to this kind of deal. And I'm intrigued by it. I'm really curious to see where it's going to go. It's also interesting for me, just watching from the outside looking in, that the Blue Jays, two of the biggest names that I've liked on that team that have been kind of mostly the underrated names, and Teoscar Hernandez and Lourdes Gurriel Jr., are now both gone after a pretty interesting 2022 campaign. And now 2023 is starting to look a lot more, shall we say, almost Frankenstein in a way, because it doesn't feel like it has those same strong pieces, but it still has pieces that are filling in there. And that maybe that's where I'm getting this kind of odd vibe from, that this Blue Jays team, we've been talking about for years now, since I believe like 2018, 2019, about how strong this young core is. And a lot of people put in that young core, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and Teoscar Hernandez. And I don't think the Blue Jays are done. I really don't think they're done moving on pieces. And I think they're trying to get to a weird place where it's, they're trying to maximize where they have their young talent at while trying to thin out the roster a bit more. But it doesn't feel like they're doing a good job of it. You know, it feels like there are definitely, like, some of these are more lateral moves more than actual growing moves.
Yeah. And I, you know, the Jays, we all picked the Jays to win the World Series coming into this year. And going into next year, I honestly have no clue what to expect from them. Because while I think they have the talent to be a playoff team, this doesn't look like a team that can go the extra mile. That's the thing is, you know, Vlad Guerrero, I don't expect to repeat what he did in 2021 necessarily. But I expect him, you know, to be pretty good again. But I look at this team and I'm like, I don't know what the depth is really. I feel like trading Teoscar Hernandez weakens the lineup for sure. And I get Lourdes Gurriel only hit 5 homers this year, but still, I feel like defensively they are much improved. Offensively, I don't know what to expect from them. I know Bo Bichette's reliable. I know that George Springer is reliable, and that. But Vlad Guerrero, he's great bat. And then you got Matt Chapman, who can hit a little bit. But then, you know, that outfield with Kevin Kiermaier playing center field now, I feel like going from Hernandez to Kiermaier is definitely a downgrade offensively. And then Varsho, I'm not saying Varsho is a bad hitter. He's got power, but I feel like he's not as great of an all-around hitter as Gurriel necessarily. So, like I said, the defense is there. And they have probably the best catching tandem in baseball. In my humble opinion, I think that Kirk and Jansen, that's the best catching tandem in baseball. I know Splash is probably losing it because of Sean Murphy and Travis Darno, but
Splash was just pointing at his Braves hat with like an increased amount of passion. It was really
funny to watch. But I stand by what I said because I think that is the best catching tandem in baseball. So there's talent there for the Jays. I still don't think they're going the extra mile. I don't even know if they can get past the Yankees. So, yeah, the Jays, They're probably like a 91 team. They're probably first round exit.
Yeah, I will agree with you there. I will say Jays have the best catching trio because remember Varsho can catch. So I do like that piece of the puzzle. Having a third catcher gives you having a third competent catcher. Sorry, Manny Pena. Having a third competent catcher says, hey, we can put Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen in the lineup whenever, right? We don't have to be, you know, hamstrung because we only have two catchers, right? It's not a Darnell and Contreras situation like Atlanta had to deal with that. There were a lot of games you'd love to put both of love to put Contreras in the lineup over Marcelo Zuna. Trust me, I would too, but you just can't because you need to have a backup catcher. And when you have three catchers as good as Kirk, Varsho, and Jansen, and I don't think there's a huge gap between them defensively, at least, and probably play Jansen more so as the catcher, and then have Varsho playing the outfield, of course, and have Kirk be your DH generally, but you can swap those around. You can have Jansen DH. You can have, you know, Varsho catch the occasional game. You know, if you want to bring in a your mix around your lineup and have some of your depth pieces get an extra game here or there. So I like the added piece there that yes, you're trading Gabriel Moreno, but you are replacing him with a player that can play the same position, but isn't confined to playing the same position. That's the issue with having three catcher only players is they only catch. You can DH, but you're really only going to catch. But Varsho can play the field or can play the outfield and can obviously run and is a great utility piece, even if he's going to be starting most of their games.
I think right now when it comes to Varsho, it's going to be interesting to see what he does with the Blue Jays. As right now, I think the Blue Jays are kind of the wild card when it comes to this because we've already seen how good they are. And they made it all the way to the ALDS last year. And again, where they lost to my Mariners. Yay. But they were still an extremely strong team. So does this move make them better? That's my question I really have for you guys now. For this move, does this trade make the Blue Jays better? Because honestly, I think no matter what, the trade makes the Diamondbacks better. I think the Diamondbacks now are got a lot of good help. And overall, just as an organization, this really helped them out. But does this trade make the Blue Jays better?
That's a tough question to answer, I feel like. Because I feel like I've been saying offensively, I feel like honestly, not more than I think about it, offensively it's a bit of a wash. I will say Varsho's faster, steals more bases. I think in the immediate future, yes, it makes the Jays better. In long term, who knows? But I'd say, yeah, it does. You know, I think, you know, they needed an extra bat in the outfield. And while it meant dealing another outfielder, Varsho is, I don't know if this is a good comparison, but I feel like he's like Kevin Kiermaier, except he hits for power, you know, and he can catch. So that definitely adds value. So I would say the Jays did get a bit better.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Jays got, they just, you know, rearranged the Jenga pieces a little bit and got a little bit better. And this is a rare case to me of a true win-win trade that both teams took a step in the right direction. And even this year, like a Gurriel on the Diamondbacks, Moreno on the Diamondbacks this year, I think makes the Diamondbacks a better team than they would be with Varsho. And Varsho on the Blue Jays, I think this year, it makes them a better team. And, you know, Arizona, they just need more talented players and they get two for one. And the Blue Jays need to kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like the opposite of dilute, like increase the concentration of their talent. And they do that. They take a player that can perform multiple roles, be a base stealer, great base runner, great outfielder, good catcher, all of that into one player, and also a left-handed hitter as well. Left-handed power hitter, I might add. So I think both teams got better, and I think the Blue Jays are better than they were the day before they made the trade.
That's fair. I think right now, personally, they did more of a lateral move where they got, you know, a bit better. I think for 2023, they got better. Because I do think that Dalton Varsho is probably better than Gurriel. But we've also seen Gurriel have amazing strides of being really high and really low. Whereas Varsho, I mean, I feel like he's a lot more on a steady up climb. But I think Gabriel Moreno is probably going to be one of the bigger pieces of this, where if Moreno turns out to be what people think he's going to be, I think that long run that the Diamondbacks are going to win this trade. So let's move on now to our next topic here, where Splash, it's time for you to talk about Mr. You got a little bit of a leaked Christmas present from Alex Santopoulos. As do you want to break the news on a catcher now getting extended by your team?
Yeah, so late last night, Sean Murphy signed a 6-year, $73 million extension with the Atlanta Braves. He has a 7th-year club option as well. And I think a lot of people were like, you can't keep getting away with this. And Atlanta has done this repeatedly. There's like 10 guys on the opening day roster that are going to fit the bill of Atlanta pays them early. They buy out some of the club control years. Like arbitration years, and they buy out a couple of the early free agency years and say, hey, we're going to give you the money now. So instead of making, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars the next couple of seasons for you being one of the better players in baseball, you're going to get a couple million dollars. And then, you know, you're going to potentially lose a little bit of money in your free agency years, but you're going to more than make up for that with these earlier deals. But Sean Murphy, 5.1 F4 last season, second to JT Realmuto, has some pop, 18 homers in Oakland last year, which feels like 40 because Oakland is a terrific defensive catcher, good arm, good framer. We obviously don't know when robo umps are coming, but for right now, good framing, good arm, that's going to play. Had 37 doubles last season and has been a career 114 OPS plus guy. And I think he's going to be a guy that benefits from playing in a lineup like Atlanta's that is very deep. You probably slide him in as the 5-hitter, the 6-hitter, and he doesn't have to worry about being the guy in the lineup. He can worry about being a good defensive catcher and being a complementary piece to one of the deepest lineups in the game. One of the, teams that I would imagine is going to be among the league leaders in runs scored. And Murphy is a complement to that rather than being the driving force like he was in Oakland.
Yeah, Splash, what you said earlier was my exact reaction, which is they can't keep getting away with this, right? I mean, you think about all the guys the Braves have locked up to these team-friendly deals now. You got Ronald Acuna Jr., you got Ozzie Albies, you know, you got Michael Harris more recently, and now Sean Murphy, and I guess, well, Matt Olson also actually on a relatively team-friendly contract. And I'm just like, man, how does Alex Anthopoulos keep getting away with this? Like, seriously, because, like, you know, Sean Murphy, it's not like Sean Murphy's as young as those guys were when they got their contract. Sean Murphy is 27, if I'm not mistaken. Just turned 28 recently, actually, so he's 28. And it's not like he's a rookie. He's had over 3 years of service time. He'd be a free agent by 2026. And now you lock him in for 6 more years. It's just, I can't believe that this keeps happening, if I'm being honest. And I wonder if, like, more teams now are going to follow this model. I know that the Rays have done it with Wander Franco. The Mariners did it with Julio Rodriguez. The Padres did it with Fernando Tatis Jr. And I now wonder, honestly, is it smarter just to give guys contracts like this? Because Sean Murphy, when he hits free agency, if he hit free agency, like, you know, his age 30 season, I could see him getting a contract like JT Realmuto. So this is a great signing by the Braves. I know Murphy might be costing himself some money, but still, I mean, I don't know how Alex Anthopoulos keeps getting this to happen.
Have any of you guys ever played College Football Revamped? It's a mod of NCAA Football 14, but with a lot more stuff put in. If you guys have, then you guys know one of the most, in the Dynasty mode, one of the most overpowered abilities in that game is what we call the Saban Factor. And the Saban Factor basically allows you to, at any time that you give a scholarship to a player that you are leading in trying to recruit, they will automatically sign with you. Alex Anthopoulos has the Saban Factor, as he is able to get away with these moves that should not be possible. They really should not be possible. Because right now, like, a lot of these players, like, these are true superstar level caliber players, or at least are about to be. And yet, he's getting away with signing them for what feels like next to nothing. Like, again, it feels a little weird saying that a guy like Sean Murphy, who is a premier catcher right now in baseball, saying that he's signed for less than $100 million. Like, that's... honestly, that's really interesting. That's really weird to see how is he able to do this, but he's able to do it time and time and time and time again. So, right now, I think that, yeah, Splash, you are probably one of the happiest boys on the earth right now, continuously knowing that you are getting these players, and you have this GM that is able to basically weave magic to be able to sign these players. There has to be something, though, that is getting these players to really want to stay there, right? Like, there's something that he's able to do to convince these players that, all right, we can't sign for a whole lot of money, but we are trying to build a championship. It's not like every player is built like Tom Brady, who will take smaller pay, is like take shorter pay just to let, you know, other players happen, or just take shorter pay to make sure that other people can get paid. If you have an entire team of that, then you're basically just a guaranteed championship winner, because you're just going to have more talent overall. But people are greedy. Baseball players are greedy. They will go for more money. Scott Boras is kind of the proof of that.
Yeah, so I think there's really three pieces here. First, teams have tried this and it's failed. I'm looking at Scott Kingery for an example. Scott Kingery,
John Singleton not, also.
Yes. Like, Kingery probably shouldn't be getting paid $8 million next season, $13 million in 2024, $14 in 2025, etc. Probably shouldn't be making that. But the Phillies said, hey, we think this guy is going to be really, really good. And, you know, it just didn't happen. So there's always a chance. You know, there's always a chance that one of the deals doesn't work. And even Acuna's the centerpiece. Acuna's the, you know, generational superstar. He tore his ACL. He's missed about three quarters of a season with tearing an ACL and recovering from the ACL. Like, obviously, I hope that doesn't happen again. I hope Harris and Strider and Riley and Olsen play 162 games a year for the next 10 years. But it's baseball. Players get hurt, and players aren't. Like, there's for every Ichiro that has a wins rookie of the year, wins MVP his first season, finishes as a Hall of Famer, there's Chuck Knoblauch, right? That's not a Hall of Famer. That's not this all-time great player. But, oh, he had a great rookie season. So there's obviously a risk there. And I think this is a case of Atlanta is willing to take that risk and say, hey, we have a culture that not many other teams can match. And this is a culture that, as a Braves fan, I grew up with, that, you know, every year in the 90s, the Braves are going to be in the playoffs. They won the division 91, 92, 93, 94. There's a strike year 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2000, 01, 02, 03, 04, 05. So you have Matt Olson is from Georgia. A lot of these guys grew up as Braves fans, grew up in the Southeast, and they saw growing up, hey, the Braves won another division. Hey, the Braves are in the playoffs again. Hey, the Braves are in the World Series again. So I think that culture is infectious, and that's something that this is a team that won the World Series in 2021. That's something Sean Murphy said in his an interview he had, I think, within 24 hours of being traded, that like, you're not getting traded anywhere, just anywhere. You're being traded to a team that has made the playoffs 5 years in a row, has been to the World Series, has won the World Series. And you know, Murphy and Olsen and Harris and Strider and these guys, they're buying into the culture. And that's, I think that's important. And that's something that, like, can't be stated enough, that you are, if you're a player like Acuna, or you're a player like Albies, you're a player like these other guys that have been paid, you might take a little bit of a pay cut to know you're going to be taken care of. You're going to, the city is going to love you. The fans are going to appreciate you. And even like Michael Harris on his 8-year, $72 million deal or whatever, he's already a pillar of the Atlanta community. Right. And I think it's important that, like, the team is like a family, and like, guys want to go into work every day. And, you know, you might get paid a little bit less than you would otherwise over the course of those 8 years, those 10 years. But remember, for right now, they're making more than they otherwise would have, right? You can look at Mac. I'm sure you're aware of Pete Alonso had 1 year that he made more money from winning the Home Run Derby than he did from the New York Mets. And he was one of the best hitters in baseball, making under $1 million, right? The Braves are going to say, hey, we're going to give our young players $4 or $5 million now instead of 800,000. And then their free agency years, we're going to bump that up to 17, 18, 19, 20, whatever. Might be a little bit below market value, sure, but you're compensating for that by giving them a little bit extra in the first few years, when Sean Murphy wouldn't be making as much money as he will be making in 23, 24, 25, as he would be if he was arbitration every single season.
Yeah, and I understand that what you're saying, though, about the risk factor. I mean, Alex, not to bring it up, but Evan White is getting paid. So he's getting paid $3 million next year, and then $7 million after that, $8 million, $10 million, $11 million, $12 million, $12.5 million. I almost forgot that the Mariners gave Evan White an extension when he was really young. But, yeah, I mean – I understand, like, the John Singleton contract, I think, was the biggest risk because he hadn't even played a major league game yet. And then that was a complete flop. You know, the thing with the Murphy one that really gets at me, though, is that this isn't an unproven player. Sean Murphy has succeeded at the major league level. He was a gold glover. He can hit. And he's getting a very team friendly contract. And I'm like, just, you know, imagine he'd actually hit free agency and he could get, you know, $100-$115 million probably in free agency. And, you know, I think maybe it is the winning culture. I think, you know, the Braves have always been a pretty respectable organization with lots of success, especially in our lifetimes. So yeah, it's definitely a good deal for the Braves. It's probably going to end up being a good deal for Murphy. And hey, maybe he does, you know, say he's effective throughout this contract. Maybe he does get paid a little extra when he does reach free agency. So I'm curious to see how that all plays out. But, man, the Braves just keep doing this, and they look pretty set for the future.
The Braves right now definitely feel like one of these teams that are definitely building for this future and are building in exactly how teams draw it up, as we call it. Like, this is exactly how they want to do it in, like, perfect ideal world, honestly, which feels a little bit weird to say that for them. And you know what? I'm happy about it. I'm happy for the Braves for it, because right now they are proving that you can build teams that are having to just go spend $1 billion doing it, Mets. And it's really fun to see what they are able to do going forward with it. So with that being said, we're going to move on here to our next topic here, as we're going to get to a couple of signings before our trivia segment. The first of which, we're going to kind of go through these ones a little bit quicker here. The first one, as Rich Hill, the veteran pitcher, Rich Hill, Dick Mountain, is going to be the newest member of, I believe it's the Pirates, you said. As the Pirates now sign the about to be 43-year-old veteran going into his 19th year in baseball and 13th different team. Guys, is this the new Jamie Moyer? Like, actually, is this the new Jamie Moyer?
I wonder, honestly. Look, I'm really happy for Rich Hill, by the way, that he's still pitching. This is a guy who's basically out of baseball. And since 2015, he's had a completely new second career, you know, going from being, you know, out of the majors, being independent ball. And now since 2015, he has a 3.32 ERA. And yeah, sure, he might not pitch deep into games necessarily, but, you know, you can trust him to go out every fifth day, and the Pirates need a veteran. And he is now going to be the oldest player in Major League Baseball rostered this year, because Albert Pujols retired. So good for Rich Hill. I hope he keeps signing contracts, and maybe he breaks Edwin Jackson's record for most teams played for.
I don't know if that happens, but gotta love. Well,
he's at 13. I mean,
who knows? But a smart signing for everyone involved. You know, Hill's going to give you probably 120 innings or so. Baseball Reference has him projected at 138 innings. And he's going to be an average to above average pitcher for his career, 111 ERA plus. Last year, 98 with the Red Sox. In 21, it was a 105. In 2020, he was very good with the Twins. Then he had the stretch with the Dodgers that he lost lost a perfect game in the 10th inning, something stupid like that, on a walk-off against the Pirates. That was
against the Pirates, yeah.
So, gotta love how baseball comes full circle. Yes, Mets legend, also Orioles legend.
And Cubs.
Let's see, Red Sox, Dodgers, Cubs, Twins, Rays. Mets, Rays, A's, Cleveland, Angels, Yankees, Orioles. Also with the infinite ERA with the Angels, but, you know, love watching Rich Hill pitch. It's like a flashback to like, he's just a different style from guys that are pumping 95 every pitch. He's a pitcher. He's not a thrower. He's a pitcher. And I think he's going to get, you know, 350 outs for a Pirates team that I'm excited to watch this season. They're going to be a team that I'm going to tune in on MLB TV to watch O'Neill Cruz, watch our Lord and Savior Key Brian Hayes. You know, this is a fun Pirates team, and, you know, I'll get to watch some Dick Mountain as well.
I think everyone just wants to see more Dick Mountain. But now, when it comes to Rachel, this is why our podcast has the weird rating to it. No, but I think it's fun just for baseball, especially because he's one of those elder statesmen that you just kind of realize, wait, he's still in the league? He's still playing? Especially when it's really fun watching him, especially throw that curveball that just looks like an Ephus nowadays. Like, it's fun watching a pitch because you know he's not the best guy. I mean, even Baseball Reference has his projected ERA at above 4, which, I mean, fair enough, I guess. But honestly, right now, I think it's a fun move. I think it's interesting, especially considering that we've heard a lot more talk about the Pirates this offseason than I think a lot of us really expected, especially with the signing of, you know, of Rich Hill, also the signing of Carlos Santana, but also all the potential trade talk of one Ryan Reynolds. And where that could be going, I think it might just be more of a decoy than anything. I'm not sure if he is going to get traded. Who knows? He very well might. But it's good to hear, you know, it's at least good to hear the Pirates in the news again. Good to hear them at least trying to make moves that are at least, you know, fun. If you can't win baseball games, you might as well have fun playing baseball. Let's move on to the next signing as Nathan Eovaldi, newest pitcher that has also gone and signed with a new team. And this is another one that's a little bit interesting to see for Eovaldi, as right, he's going to be signing with the Rangers, 2 years, $34 million. And another pitcher signing with Texas. Are they actually doing what we think they're doing? Are they actually focusing a bit more on having a pitching staff that doesn't include Dane Dunning in it now?
I'm just like, here's my thing is, the Rangers are, you know, they actually look a little more like a team. I'll give them credit. But, you know, Jacob DeGrom, when he signed with the Rangers, was talking about this, you know, he saw this vision and wants to win a World Series. And right now, this is not a roster that will do that. This looks like a fourth place team, if I'm being completely honest. And nothing against Nathan Eovaldi. I think he's a solid pitcher. You know, he was hurt some of this year, but he's a legend in Boston forever for that performance in the 2018 playoffs, especially in the World Series. But I'm really not sure what the Rangers are really accomplishing. I get they signed DeGrom, but this feels like they're like shoring up third or fourth place finish in the division. So good job. This is, in my humble opinion, like an 80 win ball club right now.
So I will say that the Rangers have compiled a terrific injuries off rotation. Jacob DeGrom, best pitcher on the
planet.
That's
my thought too, yeah.
We all know this.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nate Eovaldi, a former All-Star, World Series hero, a very good pitcher, a guy that Boston wanted to, well, Chris Sale exists, but was going to be the ace because we all know Chris Sale can't pitch five innings. Was supposed to be the ace this season, didn't quite pan out. Boston underachieved. And then you look at the rest of the rotation and, you know, these last few years as a fantasy baseball player, you're like picking up these random Rangers because they play the A's a bunch of times. They play the Angels a bunch of times. They play the Mariners before last year a bunch of times. Okay, you're gonna start these Rangers starting pitchers, right? And sometimes they'll be okay. Martin Perez was excellent last season. And sometimes they're not going to be any good. And now those pieces that you're like those streamer starter sort of deals, now those are your fifth, sixth, seventh options. And I think Texas, and like Max said, I don't think they're a World Series contender yet, but they've made some smart moves here. Now, granted, I don't think this is in the time frame of a Jacob DeGrom, but you have a viable infield. If Josh Young pans out at all, you already have a star first baseman, a star second baseman, a star shortstop. You have one of the better players in the outfield in Adelis Garcia. And you have a solid catcher in Jonah Heim, and now you have a something of a rotation that now it's contingent on these guys being healthy, but you have talented pieces there, and that's all you can really do if you're Texas. You put talented players on your ball club, and if they're injured, you know what? It happens. But if they're healthy, this could be a very good staff. And yes, they have issues in the outfield. I'm aware. I ranked the outfields the other day and their bullpen is a disaster zone. And, you know, you need Marcus Semien and Corey Seager to like hit like they're supposed to, because they started last year ice cold. But I think Texas is moving in the right direction. I just don't know how fast they're moving in that right direction.
First of all, I need to give some minus points to Splash for saying the Seattle Mariners before last year. Do I need to remind you that the Mariners the year before that were one game away from the playoffs? Anyway, I'm going to go back to something that Max said a moment ago, and that is that congratulations, Rangers, you're now an 80-win team. And if that is the case, then that brings up something really interesting, which is the fact that we're talking before the DeGrom sign. Let's go back that far. This team was going to be competing to be third in the division.
They won 68 games this year.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's not. It was like, yeah.
No. Sorry. I mixed up my words. My apologies. Before they won 68 games, and now after the DeGrom signing, we're saying, okay, they're going to probably be fourth, but competing for third. Now we're asking, it's like now we're talking about that after all these moves that they've made, now they're at 80 wins, which is about 500, which is what you can expect about a third place team. What's interesting that we're seeing now is we're starting to see this progression happen that we were talking about in 2021 when they were signing like guys like Corey Seager, that okay, now we have a team that is going to be just finishing fourth, not finishing dead last. Thankfully, the A's exist. But what's funny here is that they've kept going up in the projections from this. I think 2023 is going to be an insane year to try to prove things for the Rangers. I think how they do in this coming year is really going to show whether or not this rebuild that they're doing is worth it. And they're going to have a lot of competition. They're going to have the Astros, who have already proven to be one of, if not the best team in baseball. The Mariners have played incredible baseball as well, and have only gotten really better. And then we have the Angels, who have also been making a lot of really good moves as of late, which, again, it's really surprising too, especially since it's more and more likely we're not going to be seeing an Artie Moreno with them in the coming years. So I think at this point now, what do you do if you're the Rangers? This is going to be that kind of make it break year for them of saying, all right, we have built this up. We need to compete with you guys. And if they don't, I think we may start seeing a bit more of a collapse even faster than we thought. So with that being said, we're going to head off to our final segment. Second to last segment of the day. It's trivia time, boys, as it's the next installment of the Mac and Splash Bragging Rights Cup. Right now, Splash is leading 4-0 for one Mr. Ryan Splash Potts. Mac, you got to get on the board, buddy. You got to get on the board if you want to win. But anyway,
we're getting there. I
am your trivia master, Alex, and today's trivia, you know, one of the most important stats we talk about a lot on this show is WAR, the wins above replacement stat. And I thought it would be funny this time if we went position by position, picking players who have the most WAR, but that's too easy. We know all the best players. We know all these guys. So we're going to have a little bit of fun. I have every position. I have starting pitcher, relief pitcher, first, second, third, short, left field, center field, right fielder, and designated hitter. So 11 categories. You guys are going to take turns picking one category, and I'm going to give you two players. And these guys are not the guys at the top of the list. They're not even the guys at the bottom of the list. They're about right in the middle. And you got to tell me which one of the two has the highest FanGraphs WAR, F WAR, not Baseball Reference WAR, F WAR. So, with that being said, there are a total of 11 points available to be gotten. If you go and you say you can take the chance when you pick the category, you can hear the names that you can do play or pass. If you hit pass, the other person gets a chance to score it. But if they get the question wrong, you do not get the points. They do not get the point. You are basically telling them, I don't feel comfortable at this, so here you go. If you guys are all ready then, do you guys understand? Do you guys have any questions about this?
I'm pumped. This is a great category.
Yeah, I feel like Splash knows this pretty well. All right.
I don't know.
I'm a baseball reference guy, not a FanGraphs guy.
Yes, to be fair, I picked FanGraphs for one reason and one reason only. It was a lot easier to sort by positions.
Yes, unless you pay for it. If you pay for it, Baseball Reference makes it easier. But yeah, that's fair. I agree with you.
And I am what we call broke. So we are going to go one by one. I have a coin right here. Splash, you are the person with zero wins. I'll let you call it heads or tails. If you get it right, you get a pick.
Did you just say he has zero wins?
Yeah, Mac, you have zero wins.
Oh, you said Splash, but...
Oh, sorry, I meant to say Mac. Sorry, Mac, you have zero wins. So, right, I have my limited edition from the year 2000 Pokemon coin with Lugia on one front and Pokemon on the other side. So, all right, call it heads or tails?
Tails.
It is tails. So, you can pick, do you want to go first or do you want to go second?
I'll go first.
You'll go first. Okay. So, like I said, the categories we have are starting pitcher, relief pitcher, catcher, first base, second base, shortstop, third base, left field, center field, right field, designated hitter. And I want to be clear with this as well, that this is what FanGraphs is saying is their primary position.
All right.
The primary
position. No, I'm actually going to go with a weird one. I'm going to go with the relief pitcher.
Relief pitcher. Okay. So your two relievers, you need to tell me who has the highest F WAR. The players are Emmanuel Clase or Evan Phillips. You can play.
Wow,
that's actually
that's really. I'm gonna play here. That's
you're gonna play here. Okay.
Tough one. I think because of innings pitch, I'm actually gonna go with Evan Phillips.
You're going with Evan Phillips. You are incorrect. Emmanuel Clase at a 2.4 F WAR. Evan Phillips 2.2. So no point there for anyone. So Splash, your next pick.
Give me catcher.
All right, catcher. Your two catchers are Will Smith and Alejandro Kirk.
Oh, goodness. Okay.
Player pass.
I will play.
Okay, actually, I'm going to make a quick audible here. There's no passing. You're just going to go ahead and guess because I realize I screwed up something on the rules, but that's fine. We're calling an audible here. Go ahead and play for catcher.
Okay, so Kirk had some games at DH. Smith, as far as I can remember, didn't have too many games that he was DHing. I think Smith is also a touch better defensively. Give me Will Smith.
Will Smith is correct. 3.9 to Alejandro Kirk's 3.8 at 4. So very close. But, Splash, you get the point. All right, Mac, it is your go.
Give me first base.
All right, first base. We've got Ty France and Reese Hoskins.
Man, it's tough. I am going to go with Ty France.
You went with the Seattle boy, and the Seattle boy gets you points. 2.4 at 4 to Reese Hoskins, 2.2.
France was slightly better defensively.
Ty France is amazing defensively, and I will not take any other answer. All right, Splash, it is your go.
Let's jump to the hot corner. Give me third base.
Third base. I actually did not plan this, but there's another Mariner here. We'll see if that helps you or not. We have Eugenio Suarez versus Yandy Diaz.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. So Diaz, I think, isn't he like crap defensively? And Suarez had a solid defense?
I cannot answer that question.
Okay. Rhetorical question. Isn't Diaz kind of crap defensively, but he plays third base because he kind of has to? But
rhetorically, I can't help you here.
Yes, I know. But he had a 400 on base, and Suarez hits a bunch of homers, plays reasonable defense. I'm going to go Suarez. I think Diaz probably lost some points defensively.
Going with Suarez, hits it out of the park for another point for you, Splash. Eugenio Suarez, funny enough, the highest WAR of everyone on this list, with a 4.1 WAR to Yandy Diaz is 3.8. So, with that being said, Mac, 2 points to one. Where are you going?
Give me
to
next? Center field.
Got center field. We've got Miles Straw and Trent Grisham.
Wow. Okay, so two guys who were awful offensively and very good defensively. Huh, that's sounds about tough. Right. I'm going to go with Trent Grisham.
Trent Grisham saves you a point. 2.1 WAR to Miles Straw, 2.0. So a point for you. And it is a tied game once again at 2-2. Splash. The remaining categories are starting pitcher, second base, shortstop, left field, right field, and designated hitter.
Let's go DH.
DH, we've got for you J.D. Martinez and Trey Mancini.
Okay, I'm gonna just try to outsmart the system here. Okay. Mancini had some games at first, while friggin' I don't remember who you said first.
J.D. Martinez.
Well, Martinez rarely, if ever, plays in the field. So I feel like they were comparable hitters, at least from a WAR perspective. And then Mancini doesn't get as big of a negative because he had some games at first. So I'm going to go with Trey Mancini.
You tried to outsmart the system and outsmarted yourself instead. J.D. Martinez, even one WAR. Trey Mancini, 0.9. So no point for you. As now, still a tie ball game, 2-2.
All righty.
Mac, it is your go.
I'm going to go with starting pitcher.
Starting pitcher, two guys that are on two teams here in our podcast. We've got Charlie Morton and Robbie Ray.
Ooh. Morton or Ray? Wow, that's a tough one. I am going to go with Robbie Ray.
Robbie Ray is correct. 1.8 to Charlie Morton's 1.5. All right, so 3-2, Mac. You've taken the lead here. Splash, it's your go. Where are you heading to next?
Give me the Keystone second base.
Keystone second base, and your options are Tony Kemp and Ketel Marte.
Oh, my Lord, have mercy on our souls.
Look, here, there's a reason why I didn't go with top of the list. I felt like we were doing too much of the top name.
Man,
guys.
Okay. Okay, listen, Ketel Marte isn't the same guy that finished fourth in MVP voting a couple years ago. And if he finished above Tony Kemp in WAR, I don't care, but I don't think he deserves to be mentioned in this conversation. Tony Kemp probably had more WAR. I'm going to go Tony Kemp somehow.
Tony Kemp is correct. 1.5 to Ketel Marte's 1.4.
That is just so very hard to believe.
Yeah, it really is. All right, we've got shortstop, left field, and right field left. Mac, it's on to you.
I'll take shortstop.
All right, for shortstop, we've got Bobby Witt Jr. and Ahmed Rosario.
Wow, this is tough. Both guys who aren't very good defensively. Man, wow. I know that Witt hit for more power. I think overall Rosario was better. I'm going to go with Ahmed Rosario.
Ahmed Rosario is correct. 2.4 WAR to Bobby Witt's 2.3. All right. We've got just two positions left, boys. And right now, as it stands, there is one that will be the tiebreaker. But we'll see how it goes here. It all depends first on how Splash does on this one.
All right. Left give me Eddie Rosario's right favorite position, left field. Eddie Rosario is the incorrect answer here, I am aware.
Let's see. You got Eddie Rosario and a three-year-old child. No.
Three-year-old child.
No. All right. In left field, we've got two very different players, Kyle Schwarber and Jurickson Profar.
Oh, bro, you know, when we do the minute rant thing, I'm going to rant about the Phillies. Kyle Schwarber was an objectively mid baseball player, but he hit 46 home runs, so no one cares. And Profar is actually a guy I like a lot, but I think it's Schwarber. He had to play left a lot more than you probably wanted to because Harper had the whole UCL thing. So I think Schwarber probably got enough. The 46 homers, he walks a lot. I'll go Schwarby.
You went with Schwarber to tie the game, and you hit it out of the ballpark. That is correct. 2.6 WAR to Profar's 2.5. Now I'm having to improvise here because you guys are tied with one. With one thing left.
Yeah, wow.
All right. So I think this is probably going to be our best way to do it. I have two players here on my list for right field. And, I feel like a coin flip here to decide who picks first is kind of hard to do. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to read off both names, and I'm going to have you both DM me on Discord or text me your answer for these two names. And I'll talk while we're doing it here as well. And because I want there to build a little bit of suspense for this. And if you guys both give me the right answer, then we go to another round. You both give me the wrong answer, we go to another round. If one of you gets it right, you are the winner. Sound good to you guys?
Sounds good.
All righty. So you guys either text or DM me your answers for right
you
now.
You see my Zoom messages, yes?
Yes, I can. You can also, we record these on Zoom. If you want to, you can also send me a direct message on Zoom.
Okay. I'm going to accidentally send it to Mac and throw him off his game.
F. That's a little specious gamesmanship there. All right, the two players that you need to go for right field are Anthony Santander and new Mariner Teoscar Hernandez. Which one of these two has the higher F war? So this is going to be a bit, I did not, when I was making this, I thought, okay, we're for sure, it's going to be fine. We've got 11. There's no way we're going to tie. We're about to tie. But we'll see what is up. I have one answer. I have both answers in. Thankfully, I do not need to make a tiebreaker as you both answer differently. As it all comes down for this, the next point. Splash, you said Santander. Mac, you said Teoscar Hernandez. The winner of today's edition of the Splash and Mac Bragging Rights Cup. It is 5-0 for Splash as what? It is Anthony Santander.
Ice in the veins, boys.
How is that possible? 2.5 to 2.4.
That is fake news. I don't believe it.
Okay, look. Braves legend Anthony Santander had a nice season last year for Baltimore.
Yeah, but he barely played the field.
Well,
I feel like.
Well, it's okay. Because with the Braves, he actually is better than Eddie Rosario in the field, so that's okay.
That's not saying a lot.
That's a good point.
That's not saying anything. All right, we're going to end off today's show with the minute to ourselves and Splash. You've been talking about how you're ready to talk about the Phillies. I'm going to let you do it here. I will give you your starting time in 3, 2, 1, begin.
All right, listen. The 2007 National League MVP is a hoax, but in a bigger way, MVP awards and awards in general are really stupid when people apply them to Hall of Fame ballots. So on this ballot, there are a couple of MVP players. Jeff Kent, the 2000 MVP with the San Francisco Giants. Jimmy Rollins, 2007 NL MVP with the Philadelphia Phillies. A-Rod, 3 MVPs, etc. However, there are real-life people voting for Jimmy Rollins because he won an MVP, because he won a World Series, considering at all that, guess what? He played a lot more games than the, 350 some odd games between the 07 and 08 seasons. Yes, he was great in 07. Yes, he had a 30-30 season. Yes, that's the first Philly. I think the first Philly to do that. He had 20 steals. He was good enough defensively. And he won a World Series with the Phillies in 2008. I get that. But you were looking at a better player in Bobby Abreu, so vote Bobby Abreu for the Hall of Fame, not Jimmy Rollins.
Fair enough. Totally get it on that point. I get both people's, I guess, on that, but at the same time, you make a very compelling argument. Splash. All right, Mac, would you like to go next, or you want me to go?
Yeah, sure, I'll go.
Okay, sounds good. Your time will start in 3, 2, 1, go.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I was thinking about a Hall of Fame related rant, but I won't. I'm going to talk about Carlos Correa for a second and the whole Mets situation, which is, the thing is, I feel like the Mets don't necessarily need Carlos Correa. The Mets won 101 games this past year. They have plenty of talent without him. Say they don't end up with him, they still have Eduardo Escobar and Brett Beatty who can play third base. You can have Luis Guillorme fill in. But the thing is that if the Mets get Correa, they have one of the best lineups in baseball, if not the best lineup in baseball. So that's the thing, is that they go from, all right, they're projected to win 102, 103 games to probably getting close up to 110. And I would consider them one of the favorites for the World Series if they get Correa. So that's the difference. They go from being a good team to a great team with Correa. And so that's why I still want the Mets to sign him.
Honestly, that's really fair. I get that. And like Correa on the Mets, it's, the idea is salivation worthy. Anyway, I'll go on to mine. And I'm not going to talk about baseball because I want to have fun with this kind of category. So I will start mine in 3, 2, 1. So we just passed the holiday Christmas season, and I want to talk a little bit about gifts. And I mean, gifts, like, honestly, I love receiving anything. If anyone takes the time out of their day to go and get something for, like, for another person, I think that should be, you know, commended. I think it's really nice. I personally, like, there's a huge debate about whether or not people like homemade gifts versus, like, just going bought from the store gifts. I love both, but there's always going to be a special place in my heart for people that make gifts for another person, especially when they use their own talents in order to make something. One of my best friends sent me my first Christmas present of the day at 12:30 on the 25th of a character that I play a D&D game. My character in the Ace Attorney style, which is one of my favorite video game series of all time. And it just put such a smile on my face, and because I knew it was them getting to really show off what they do and then make something that took them time and effort to give to me. But that is my moment to myself here. We've all talked about good, interesting things, and now we are at the end of our podcast. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in here. Make sure you go follow Splash at Mr. Splashman 19 on Twitter. Make sure you go follow Mac at, like, on Twitter at Matthias_A_K. The last episode of 2022, everyone, as the next time that we come to you, it will be in the magical year of 2023, also known as the year that the Seattle Mariners win the World Series. So with all that being said, thank you all for coming in and listening to us today. My name is Alex. I've been your host. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe, and I hope to see you all real soon.